Well, it is Thursday here in Tucson, and Matt, I heard you, that you're taking my heat away
again. I'm sorry.
You know, I'm never going to get a tan. I'm being cryogenically frozen. That might be a good thing, though, right? You know, I won't age.
Well, it's the overnight lows that I think we're going to be problematic for you. High 30s, but just a few more days.
Okay. Well, I hope my beautiful flowers don't freeze.
High 30s, so I think you're safe there, I think.
All right. Well, we'll see. But where we're not safe is... The Biden administration has another great plan to get involved. This government is committed to being our doctors. And what they're trying to do is turn local pharmacies into abortion clinics to circumvent the Roe versus Wade decision, the Hobbs decision. And so I've invited my good friend, Lori Gray, who works on pro-life across the state, across this nation, is a huge advocate not abort, to give birth, and to talk about this issue. So, Lori, welcome to Win Tucson.
Hi, Kathleen. I'm so excited to be here this morning. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. I appreciate you are relentless in the pursuit, like I am relentless on fighting trafficking. You are relentless in this lane. And so I received a flyer that says don't dispense death. So there's a something going on this weekend up in Phoenix, and tell my listeners about that, and then after that we're going to go into why you're having this, what's going on, and what people now need to know that this government is trying to get away with. So.
Well, thank you for that, Kathleen. So this weekend at the Phoenix Convention Center, there is an annual pharmaceutical conference and Live Action, an amazing nationwide pro-life organization headed up by Lila Rose, is organizing a rally, so to speak, outside of the Phoenix Convention Center so that the pharmacists there can hear the truth, so that pro-life advocates and those who advocate for the preborn and their moms can hear the truth about chemical abortion.
And so... Our pharmacist, so chemical abortion, so the pharmacist would, so explain that to my listeners. So the pharmacist would prescribe something that, explain that process. Explain what you're fighting against.
Well, let's talk about chemical abortion first.
Please.
You might be a little bit surprised, Kathleen, how many good and decent regular citizens of the United States don't even know what a chemical abortion pill is. So a chemical abortion consists of two different chemicals, one mifepristone and the second misoprostol. Those two drugs together create a drug usually called RU486, a system by which a woman, if she is supposedly pregnant up to 12 weeks, not supposed to be used past 12 weeks, but unfortunately it is. They take the first pill, and that pill blocks progesterone, and that's a hormone that a woman has that prepares the lining of the uterus to support the baby. That first pill blocks progesterone and causes effectively that baby to die in the mother's womb. 48 hours later, that mother would take the second pill, which is misoprostol, and that is what empties the uterus. And this, by this stage, women are instructed to go in their bathrooms alone, sit on the toilet, and don't look, because a series of incredibly strong contractions and cramps begin, with most of the time very, very severe and heavy bleeding. Mm. These women are in their bathrooms and their homes alone without the benefit of a doctor, without the benefit of someone else helping in case something goes wrong. And unfortunately, many things go wrong in this process. As of today, we're, as best we can tell, around 60% of all abortions in the United States are chemical abortions. So these women all over the country are in the bathroom alone, perhaps hemorrhaging, definitely going through some serious emotional stress, having to abort their baby in the toilet.
And so does the medical profession think this is the answer to state laws? Is this, I mean, this has been going on for a while. This is not, this is not new. But in the way in which you just described it, I don't think I've ever heard it described that way, Lori. So is it just time to tell the truth about the process?
And that is exactly what's happening, Kathleen. We are telling the truth. What's happening is, in your opening, you mentioned the this current administration. What has happened is the FDA, the Federal Drug Administration, has declared that the abortion pill, or the chemical abortion, medically chemical abortion, different names, is now approved by the FDA, even though many studies and cases are showing that women are dying, are suffering, and it is affecting them. Fortunately, as we speak, Texas, the state of Texas, is challenging that FDA approval, and we're waiting to see what happens with that. We're praying that this could set a precedent. If, in fact, Texas decides that it is not legal for the FDA to approve this drug to be sold over the counter, we have a chance to slow down the distribution of this horrible chemical that damages women.
Is that the Texas AG Ken Paxton that's leading that fight? Do you know?
No, actually, I'm sure he's part of it, but there's a judge in Texas who has agreed to take on this, to look at the case.
Wonderful. Okay, that's awesome. Well, Lori, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, I want to talk about our current AG here in Arizona, what she's fighting for and not fighting for, and how we as Arizona citizens can help you in taking up this cause, because this is a fight that we need to take on to protect the unborn. Our children are under attack from the very beginning. You're listening to Kathleen Wynn on Wynn Tucson on 10:30 a.m. The Voice, trusted local news and talk. And we're going to come back right after these messages. Welcome back to Wynn Tucson. We are talking about a problem that has different solutions. If you are pregnant I'm a big advocate of pregnancy and delivering and pro-life, but we have an issue where people medically want to terminate their pregnancies. And if you look up abortion pill, you can get one from a doctor, nurse, health clinic, or in big letters in Planned Parenthood Health Center. So, Lori, this is just another way to fight this. And the FDA and this administration is taking up the side of those who want to terminate their pregnancies. And what is disconcerting about this is, as you read it, on this site, it's saying a doctor should be present when you do this. But clearly, that's not what's happening. Is this almost, it's dangerous, and there seems to be, is there any regulations that require that if this medicine is prescribed or given to somebody, that a doctor is, or a healthcare professional is available when, as you graphically described, the effects of the drugs take place?
Absolutely. So as you read, and as you would read previously on inserts, it is important that a doctor be present. It is important that a woman has an exam. For example, if you can take a home pregnancy test and find out that you're pregnant. But if that pregnancy is a tubal pregnancy, without an exam, there's no way a woman would know that, for the most part. In this case, driving down to your local drugstore and getting the RU486 or the like abortion, chemical abortion pills, that process could kill a woman and does kill women because they're tubal pregnancy. There's no uterus to empty. There's no material, as they call it, in the uterus to empty. So these are very important things. The big thing about our discussion today is to inform the public about the truth. The truth about the abortion pill is that it kills, maims, and emotionally affects women. Of course, in the pro-life movement, we know that we're saving lives. We're fighting to save the lives of the preborn, human beings made by God. But we also have to focus on the women. There is a war against women, and that is the absolute truth. And women are not being told the truth about these procedures, whether it's a chemical abortion or a medically administered abortion. Women don't know the truth about it. For example, in Arizona, so that we know, Arizona law actually protects pharmacists from being forced to dispense chemical abortion pills. Pharmacists need to know this, because if morally their personal rights, their belief system, they are against this, they do not have to dispense it, and they cannot be punished for it. Arizona law also prohibits chemical abortions via telehealth, meaning you can't have a telehealth appointment and be prescribed this chemical legally in Arizona.
So the doctor over the internet cannot prescribe this.
So not in the state of Arizona.
But
no.
I'm going to ask this question. Are these pills being prescribed in the state of Arizona?
Absolutely.
Okay. And I just want to read on this site, medical abortion has been used safely, I'm going to underline that, in the U.S. for more than 20 years. Serious complications are really, really rare, but can happen. These include the abortion pills don't work and the pregnancy doesn't end. Some of the pregnancy tissue is left in your uterus. Blood clots in your uterus. Bleeding too much or too long. Infection. Allergic reaction to one of the medications. These problems aren't common, but if they do happen, they're usually easy to take care of with more medication or other treatments. And in extremely rare cases, some complications can be very serious or even life-threatening. So call your doctor or health center right away if you experience any of these. Is that how we want those people that complain about our medical system? Is that what we want? Isn't that inhumane and dangerous?
First of all, they're telling the truth, and as you read it, doesn't it sound ridiculous? Like, why would you want to do this? But they add in there, it's very rare. That's not true. And one of the chores that we have is actually getting the data to find out who these women are that are injured by using this abortion pill. Because women who pass away, unfortunately, are rarely diagnosed with the proper diagnosis because of it. The chemical abortion operates so much like a miscarriage because of the process. Many times, complications are called a miscarriage.
Right.
But it was not. It was induced by the chemical abortion. And there's also serious immune suppressant properties in these two drugs. We know that the taking of these drugs can severely suppress your immune system. And we actually know of 8 women who have died months or weeks after or having overwhelming infections that came because their immune system was so compromised using this drug to abort a child.
And then how does this affect the men that are having babies, Lori?
I'm sorry, Kathleen. men can't have babies.
Thank you. Thank you for clearing that up. I just wanted to make sure that I was still on this planet.
Glad I can help.
Yeah, thanks for talking truth. And when you listen to all this, you wonder why they would even want to have babies. But and that is not to mock people. It is just to say that this is a biological function. Childbirth is a biological function, and it is a miracle in and of itself. And that people would recklessly prescribe medicine that one of the things says you can have large clots bigger than a lemon for more than 2 hours, have cramps or that don't get better with pain medication. You might get a fever of over 100 and it may last for over 24 hours after taking these drugs. So you may have bleeding that lasts more than 24 hours. I don't understand why this is a good plan. I'm not for medical abortions either, but this taking these drugs seems like, and especially with all the pharmaceuticals that we don't even know may be laced with fentanyl, there's so many complications right now with our pharmaceutical organizations and just having safe drugs. And the border being open contributes to just a distrust of our entire medical system. But we have to be able to seek and be able to trust the medical profession. But if you prescribe this, you essentially, like your flyer says, could be dispensing death.
Absolutely. Well, it is definitely dispensing death. And just in some cases, it can be the death of two, the mother and the baby.
So, Lori, on the protest is Saturday?
Yes, there's a rally. There'll be speakers there. I'll actually be speaking there, just informing the public that comes to hear about the truth concerning chemical abortion. Kathleen, I know I said this already, but I want to repeat it.
Please.
You would be astonished about to understand how many Americans don't even know what a chemical abortion is. So we need to be educated. The big thing about what we're trying to do in the pro-life movement and the pro-mother movement is to educate the public. We're bombarded with 50 years of propaganda and lies. Even the article, even the information that you just read, they twist and do a sleight of hand concerning the facts.
Correct.
To encourage women to go this route. And it's about money. It's all about money. It's about the culture of death that exists in our country and the pharmaceutical profits.
The pharmaceutical profits, if we haven't after COVID learned who the pharmaceutical companies are committed to, then we weren't paying attention. But yeah. U.S. pharmacies are on the verge of turning everyday neighborhood drugstores into abortion clinics and hardworking pharmacists into death dealers. And I think that this is one of those things about not getting whether you got a vaccine or didn't, not wearing a mask, wearing a mask. There's certain decisions that you need to be informed about before you just do what your girlfriends tell you to do or what Planned Parenthood tells you to do. Do the research. It's one thing if you have a pregnancy. It's another thing if by terminating that pregnancy, you also are doing great damage to your health, to your body, and some of it irreversible. And so American pharmacists, they all will not want to do this, just like we had doctors in the hospital that didn't want to participate. So I think it's good this weekend to challenge Big Pharma, hear what the hardworking hearts of all pharmacists, and don't let them dispense death. I think that is a wonderful message. So Lori, just give us real quick the details of where you're going to be so people that want to come out and support can.
Well, we'll be at the Phoenix Convention Center outside, fellowshipping, talking, having a great time, informing the public. It'll be a wonderful time to meet other like-minded people.
10 a.m. to noon?
Yes, ma'am. 10 a.m. to noon on Saturday, March 25th, Phoenix Convention Center outside.
Okay, let's let our pharmacists know we don't want them to dispense death. Lori Gray, I just thank you for the work you continue to do. Have a wonderful weekend. It's coming soon. And we'll be back right after this. You're listening to Wynn Tucson on AM 1030 The Voice. I'm Kathleen Wynn. We'll be back with Seth Keschel and the ruling for the Supreme Court yesterday on the Carrie Lake case right after this. Welcome back to Wynn Tucson on this Thursday. That Matt has informed me they're going to turn off the heat again in Arizona and make it cold.
There is an 80-degree mark early next work week. So.
Okay, all right.
I got to give you something to look forward to.
Okay, I wear my sweaters and put them away after this weekend. We are going to shift gears here from the abortion pills to the Arizona Supreme Court, and they came out with a ruling yesterday on the Carrie Lake appeal over the governor's race that happened November 8th. Yes, November 8th, 2022. We are still in court over election matters. And people need to know that it's not over until it's over. And the Supreme Court remanded this case back to a lower court. And I've invited Seth Keschel, who has been on this from the very beginning with statistical data, analyzing this, working with, I know with the Lake case, I believe he's also worked a little bit with Abe Hamadeh. And Seth, welcome back to Wynn Tucson.
Well, Kathleen, I appreciate the invite. I think this is my third or fourth time on your show. And as always, Ground Zero, Arizona, is where we need to be.
Yes, absolutely. And so, Carrie Lake's case, the Court of Appeals rejected Lake's assertions and concluding that she had presented no evidence of voters whose ballots were unreadable by tabulators at polling places were not able to vote. I think that was I think it was a mistake, and apparently the Arizona Supreme Court thought so too. So this case, does it go back to Superior Court? Does it go back to the Appeals Court? Where does this go from here? Let my listeners know the process of what Ms. Lake and her attorneys have to do at this point.
The order from the Arizona Supreme Court directed the trial court, that would be Peter Thompson's court, to review the signature verification issue.
Superior
and
Court.
Of course, it was disqualified on the grounds that it was a procedural issue at the time that Thompson issued his decision outlawing the signature verification from being considered in his court. So Lake's team, of course, alleged that thousands upon thousands of ballots were illegally counted and could not therefore have been known that it should have been challenged before the election, because of course that happened in the course of the election. Now, the signature verification is one of the key ways that fraud is committed and executed, and as well as chain of custody. So the order doesn't go as far to get into the chain of custody issues that haven't been thoroughly parsed, but this is definitely a big first step, because the signature verification is what fails mail-in balloting in general, no matter what state you're in.
And we in Arizona did something that no other state did. We hired an outside third party to verify our signatures, and that name of that company is Ronbeck, right? So Arizona is special once again when it comes to our elections. We do things that no one else does. Is that a problem?
Yes, Ronbeck is a known major donor to left-wing causes. Absolutely not a neutral organization. And when you insert a third-party vendor like that into the official election procedures, it should be one of the most easily illegal things that you can find in any election procedure that should be ruled out and done away with. Understand that moving to voting centers and getting away from precincts allows for a third-party vendor to stick its nose in like this and then be in charge of signature verification and also inserting any other illegal processes that may somehow skew the vote, add votes, deduct votes. If you can't see the votes and count the votes at the precinct, then you don't have a clear and transparent election.
Well, and you bring up a good point. We don't have precincts. I mean, we do. By law, we have precincts, but we don't vote in our precincts anymore. We vote at voting centers. And 60% of the voters are in Maricopa County. And Maricopa County had systematic failures across the board on Election Day. And it's my understanding the day before when they ran their test, everything was fine. It was operating fine. Everyone agrees that it was. But on Election Day, there was some kind of systematic failure. Will that involve the signatures or will it not?
The signature verification issue is most likely the tool in which Democrats are amping up their supposed turnout by mail-in voting. The Democrat agenda is extremely unpopular, and among all the Sun Belt states, especially the Republican-turning Sun Belt states, they are not growing in support despite the population growth in the state. If you need to test me on that one, you can check out how things are going for Democrats in Florida with elections. In fact, the Democrat base there, which is much like the Democrat base in Arizona, is turning against the party and now voting Republican. The disenfranchisement issue in Arizona that you mentioned, Carrie Lake's first case that went forward to Thompson's court in December, it alleged that 72% of Americans agreed with her claim that Maricopa County purposely disenfranchised its own citizens in their own election. And after the evidence that was shown by Kurt Olson and team in court, that number has to be more than 80% easily. So disenfranchisement is what is happening. And all across that state, so Arizona, Maricopa County and Pima County, Pima, of course, is Metro Tucson, as you know, 7 out of 9 votes in the state come from those two counties.
Right.
Of course, 3 out of 5 come from Maricopa. 1 out of 6 come from Pima County. What is happening is the other 13 counties, and some of them are large counties, like Pinal County or Yavapai County. Well, yes. Some of those counties are large, but they're putting in their votes on election night. 95 to 99% of their vote is in on election night. And we have these two counties that are allowed to continue to compile and count votes for days on end in a state that is, because of size and because of the dominance of the urban areas, you're not going to find Wyoming-sized Republican wins, but you can find 10-point, 15-point Republican wins. You can easily take in all the data that is available from the Republican strongholds, because outside of Phoenix and Tucson, most of the state is heavily Republican. You've got a couple exceptions like Coconino County and Apache County. But it's easy for those big mega counties to overcome the rural counties. So disenfranchisement is the name of the game in Arizona. And because we don't have transparency, we have situations like this in which people cannot believe or accept the results of elections. And I will tell you, nobody should believe election results in Arizona from 2018, 2020, or 2022. That's 3 federal elections in a row that the state has been fundamentally shifted from its natural political trajectory. And you can confirm this with a number of grassroots leaders from all across the state. It doesn't matter what county you're in, and I've been working with a lot of them.
And talk about that, if you don't mind. You have been working, and you've been here. You testified recently in front of the Election Integrity Committee at the state, the combined committee of the Senate and the House at the state legislature. But we've got, did we wait too long to fix this? And can we make a difference right now? What can we as Arizonans do?
There's too much of a political hot potato being tossed around in the legislature. Of course, you have very narrow Republican majorities the last 2 sessions.
Right.
And you typically have a couple rhinos that don't care to stick their nose into the elections issue. You know, people like Paul Boyer in the last session. Then you have other people that want to go after the elections issue like it doesn't matter, like Ken Bennett. But then you have some people that are strong on the elections issue. Of course, we had Mark Fincham, who ran for Secretary of State and should have won. Sonny Borelli, Rachel Jones are excellent. Then you have citizens in the grassroots who are major voices, like Colonel Steve Murray in Maricopa County. Master Sergeant Jack Donna down in Cochise County has been a friend of mine and a mentor.
Mm-hmm.
And they've done some major heavy lifting down in the local areas. So Jack has done a lot of great work in Cochise County. And Cochise, of course, was the site of the gussed up over the hand count of ballots. And my numbers for 2020 in Cochise County suggest that Biden has about 7,000 votes in that county that really shouldn't exist based on any historical trend chart. There's a lot of people in the state that take the issue seriously. The political power to be able to do something about it is another story.
And to that point, Kerry allegedly lost by 17,000 votes. An undervote could count that, right? So even if there were votes, but they didn't get counted, that could cause that issue, correct? So if they took
Richard,
go ahead.
Richard testified at Thompson's court that based on the turnout that was turned away by the machine issues on election day, that Kerry Lake would have won her race. And of course, Hamadeh would have won as well. That would have excluded Fincham and Masters. But my numbers suggest that Fincham and Masters would have won their races by about 100,000 votes a pop as well. So yes, the turning away of voters cost Kerry Lake a victory, but also the inclusion of fraudulent ballots for the Democrat top of the ticket is why you have Fontes and Hobbs and Mays in office and Mark Kelly.
And Abe Hamadeh, 280 votes. We're hearing that there's, I had Jen Wright, his attorney, on last Friday, and she's saying there's 6,100 ballots out there that are provisional, that have not been counted. That won't help Kerry, but will this signature thing that is happening with Kerry Lake, could that help Abe?
You would think it could, but there's a reason that they've not been counted. They've already seated the people that they need in power there. All of those positions, especially governor, secretary of state, and attorney general, are critical for turning the ship around in Arizona. Now, Kerry Lake, she has special executive powers as governor to be able to uncover tons of corruption. And that's a major reason that she wasn't allowed in. Mark Fincham, of course, being able to upset not just Arizona's election fraud problem, but the national issue as well, which is why on election night 2022, the only thing that I cared about, despite there being serious arterial bleeding all across the electoral map, even in the Northeast, New York, Pennsylvania, all I really cared about was Arizona and Nevada.
Right.
Out west, we get the business done because we have two Secretary of State candidates out there that can completely turn over this elections issue. And we saw it. There's 400,000 ballots left to count. Kerry's only down by 10,000 votes. She's down by a couple thousand votes. She should win by 10 points until she doesn't.
Right.
And they drain the ballots over 8 or 10 days. Any election that takes that long to count is not a believable election that people should have any confidence in.
Seth, we're going to take a short break. We've got callers calling in. Can you stay with me to take a couple calls?
Yep.
Okay, great. You're listening to 10:30 a.m. The Voice. I'm Kathleen Wynn. This is Wynn Tucson. We'll have a short break. We'll be back right after this. The Arizona Supreme Court ruling. What do we do? And can Kerry Lake or Abe Hamadeh get into office? We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to Wynn Tucson. We are still talking about the 2022 election. I'm going to talk about it so people understand that we are still in court. And until you have a final legal decision, this is still in play. It may be like a Hail Mary pass from the center court like ASU did to U of A at the game, but they still won. It wasn't pretty, but you have to let these things play out. We're talking to former military intelligence Army Captain Seth Keschel. Seth has been on the election issues. Seth, would you, before we get into this and take the calls, would you let people know about your organization and if they want to get your, I get your newsletters every day, they're brilliant. And if they want to follow you and on the work that you're doing, not only in Arizona, but across the country, how do they find you?
Of course, I am a one-man wrecking crew, and I publish my musings, my, as Jack would call them, my missives, and also a lot of my research for the last 2.5 years. I publish them on Substack at skeschel.substack.com. Over 17,000 people read that newsletter, and I publish pretty much every other day. Social media, my two most prominent channels are on Truth Social and Telegram at Real S Keschel, K-E-S-H-E-L. I did get back on Twitter because that seems to be all the rage these everybody throwing their Twitter account around, which I don't really care for because I self-canceled myself with 64,000 followers, but decided to get back on. But yes, my Substack is where you're going to catch the most actionable items and also be able to access all of my research, which covers 3,143 counties and independent cities in the United States for the last 2 years.
Thank you. And this is Captain K, Seth Keschel. So we're going to take a call from Charles. Charles, welcome to Win Tucson. And you have a call or a question or a comment? Yes, please.
A question, and if Substack before us, who can be against us? But the actual question is, let's assume for a moment, let's play what if, Captain Keschel, and say, let's assume that the court rules in Ms. Lake's favor and says that, yes, the people were disenfranchised enough to upset the election more than the 17,000 votes by which she allegedly lost. Now what? What does Arizona law say about disenthroning an established any political officer, be it a governor or anybody else? What does Arizona law say happens next?
Well, that's a pretty tough question there. Lake's initial relief in the case that went forward to the Thompson court was for her to either be seated as the winner of the governor's race. Now, I think that's a little bit shallow because not only was she disenfranchised, Hamadeh was closer to even than she was at least in the certified results. And then you have Fincham and Masters impacted by that as well. And I'm not even sure if we were to go into any local county races or school board races, the whole county, not just the county, but Maricopa especially is messed up. So the second relief that she requested would probably be the most appropriate, which would be to have a new election in Maricopa County. Now, Arizona is somewhat famous for having a governor's election overturned. The 1916 election was overturned, and that was when the wrongful winner had already been seated. I'm not sure as far as the case law or the procedures that were followed at this point on this call to be able to tell you if they're still relevant 100 plus years later. But I would assume that if you had a decision like that, the court may be shallow and demand that there be an overhaul of the election procedures and not change or call for a new election, which would be unprecedented. But some point in time in this country, there will be a major election that is overturned the way things are going, because we're not moving in the right direction. In fact, we've gone the wrong way in a number of states where they're enshrining, like in Nevada, they're enshrining their fraudulent practices into law. Nevada does this to their election completely legally.
Go ahead.
May I ask a follow-up?
Sure. Go ahead.
Sure. I get what you're saying in terms of court procedure. But my question is it governments run on laws? I mean, even though they run poorly, adhered to them, they run on laws. And my point is, if there isn't statute law to say this is what will happen, and I know they're working on one in the legislature right now, mm-hmm. If there isn't one to say what will happen, then my assertion is that nothing will happen, even if they find that she was the duly elected candidate. I'll listen to your response on the air. I don't want to hog.
Okay, thank you. And Seth, can I go first for just a second, if you don't mind? I think that we have to understand we have to follow the law. We can't say we're for the Constitution, we're for the rule of law, and then if we don't like something that happens, we can't be that. But at the same time, if there's fraud or if there is a thing that does not allow that ballots were counted, every ballot is also supposed to be counted. So there's not just, you don't get to just look at one law, you have to look at the sum total of the laws. And so in Arizona, did we get the laws passed that we wanted the last 2 years in the legislature? No. And this is the result of that. And right now we have a dynamic where this governor, possibly seated illegally, is vetoing everything. And the Democrat legislators are very proud of the fact that nothing will get done. And they're mocking the Republican legislators right now. So to Charles' point, if there isn't a statute that they can go to, we may not have a way forward to either have another election or seat someone who may have won. And then Seth, I'll let you take it from there.
And that's really the extent of what my answer would be. I don't have the rules in place in my mind or in front of me on this call to be able to answer the question properly.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that Lake's legal team would have filed relief in accordance with Arizona law that may allow for a new election to take place. Some of those, of course, connected to previous federal rulings as well. The cases referenced in the lawsuit and also in Thompson's decision, some of those went back into the 1800s, where you're talking about Doc Holliday days in Arizona. So we've reached a point in time where the cheating is so pervasive in our elections that we barely even have any remedies to cover it. Look at in Arizona, where it says that you have to prove, if you lost by 17,000 votes, you have to identify 17,000 fraudulent votes for them to even care, or they won't even rule on the case, which of course is wrong in itself. Why not just go ahead and win your races by 250,000 votes, because you'll never be able to account for all of them if this is election fraud, which is different than voter fraud.
Correct. And we have another caller, Frank, with a question and on what can we do to impact election process now. Frank, go right ahead.
Good morning to both of you. Hello, Seth. This is Frank Wessling.
Frank. I hear you on the radio.
So what's your question?
Yeah, that's excellent.
Frank.
My question is obviously we have elections that are impacting not just five states, but basically every other state out there. What can, in your opinion, the average American citizen do to help right what's going on with our election system? How do we spend our time most efficiently, and what should our focus be?
Good question. Thank you. Go ahead, Seth.
That's an excellent question, because we have plenty of influencers out there, which I guess you could lump me into that group, and that's somebody, an influencer is not necessarily bad. Not everybody's out there milking the system and trying to keep this out there. An influencer spreads information, it spreads ideas. You have good and bad influencers. What we don't have enough ground level troops in every county. Remember, there's 3,143 independent counties and cities in the United States. And I put out a project called Four for the Core, and it's fourforthecore.com. And that project is kind of in limbo right now. I'm linking it with Cause for America to make sure that we're touching all the bases, dotting I's and crossing T's and not being redundant. But that calls for citizens to get involved at the county level. Because it's not just Maricopa and Pima counties in 2020 or 2022. It's almost all the counties in Arizona. And you can find fraudulently cast ballots that are obvious in the statistical tallies in these counties. For example, I could flip Arizona back to Trump in 2020, not even looking at Maricopa or Pima counties. I could find the votes in Navajo and Apache counties together to flip the state. So we need people in front of their county commissioners and their elections officials pushing them to clean out the voter rolls, which is the foundation of the fraud. Without fraudulent voter rolls, they have a hard time matching mail-in ballots to fraudulent registrations, filling them out, and then harvesting them and putting them in drop boxes. Then gauging their willingness to get away from machines. We have a lot of counties individually that are pushing away from machines, and we need people like that. And then if you talk to Gina Maloney, who's a Republican chair of five in Maricopa County.
Okay, and we got to go. We're going to go. And Seth, we'll have you back as this case unfolds. And just thank you for your time, Dave, for all your work. Captain K, Seth Ketchel, catch him on all the social media that you can. He's back on Twitter. We'll be back tomorrow. We're going to talk to Corey Magar, our state rep, and I'll have a surprise. Have a great day. It's Kathleen Wynn with Wynn Tucson on 10:30 a.m., The Voice.